Pushkin.
This is Solvable. I'm Jacob Weisberg.
Habits are only good or bad in relation to your goals.
Every year, as the new year approaches all across America, millions of us take a look at our lives and think about making changes. Changes in how we exercise, the money we save, the hours we spend on the internet.
We always think of discipline as sort of self-denial. It's the kind of white-knuckling it through. We're going to make ourselves do it. So that's a high-effort sort of a process.
For those of us who actually make fresh goals, fewer than half of us will stick with them. Many of us won't even get through January. But research psychologist Wendy Wood thinks that's because we're thinking about our goals upside down. A lot of goals aren't about making fresh habits.
So we really are trying to change a habit that we've already formed. And that requires different strategies than willpower and motivation.
Dr. Wendy Wood is Provost Professor of Psychology and Business at the University of Southern California. And she thinks
persistent behavior change is solvable.
Just to start out, Wendy, to ask a perhaps obvious question, what is a habit?
A habit is actually, it's an answer. It's a solution. It's a way that people stick with behavior. It's a way they persist. Habits you can think of as a sort of learning mechanism. Something good happens, some good outcome happens. You form habit memories that allow you to repeat it again in the future.
So when we talk about bad habits, and just about everybody I know, I think, would say they have some bad habits, however hard they're trying or not trying to change them. Is it that you're somehow getting rewarded, or you've gotten into a pattern of being rewarded for that bad habit?
Bad habits are habits that are inconsistent with our goals. They conflict with our goals. So they're things that we don't want to do. And they got rewarded in the past. Rewards are really important for forming a habit. They're not quite so important once you've formed one. And that's the real challenge. We keep doing what we did in the past that was rewarding. But right now, we've changed our mind. And we want to be doing something else. But the habit memory sticks. And so it keeps us doing that thing.
You know, you've just reminded me, I grew up in Chicago and went to a school that was across the street from a zoo. And as a result, we had a course that I took, which was called Patterns in Animal Behavior. And what we did was we went over to the zoo and watched animals for like a long time, like an hour or two. And what you saw was repetitive habits. I don't know if you call them habits when they're animals and not humans, but these animals just did the same thing again and again. And it might have been a complicated routine, but over time you would see the repetitive behavior. And it's always made me think that, well, humans are animals and we do the same thing. We just have these repetitive grooves that we get into.
Exactly. What a great class. You're absolutely right. Habits are a form of learning that we share with all mammals. I mean, because it's how your dog learns, right? It's how you train your dog. Giving them rewards for doing the same thing over and over. The challenge for humans, though, is that we have this very elaborate, more thoughtful decision-making parts of our brain, as well as the habit systems that we share with all mammals. And those sort of more elaborate, thoughtful areas are what makes us decide, geez, I wish I didn't do this. And that's where we get into conflict with the habit system.
So it's that time of year when lots of people make New Year's resolutions. And I think the evidence suggests that most people won't keep most of those resolutions. So what's your advice for changing habits that we want to change and having the change stick?
You're absolutely right that most people don't stick with them. At best, about half of us will be successful at keeping our New Year's resolutions. Most people say, if I fail, I didn't have enough willpower. we tend to ascribe it to ourselves and our own limitations. But keep in mind that most of the resolutions we make are changing an existing behavior. So we really are trying to change a habit that we've already formed. And that requires different strategies than willpower and motivation. Because you're not going to stay motivated as long as your habit memory is going to persist. The best way to change a habit is to alter the cues in the environment, what is activating that response. And let me give you an example. So I get up in the morning and I walk into my kitchen and I make coffee. And I do so, I don't ask myself, do I want coffee this morning? Am I tired enough? I just make it automatically without thinking about what I'm doing. You might have had this experience when you get in your car, right? You just automatically put your seatbelt on. You don't think about all of the reasons why you should or shouldn't. It's something that's automatic. So that's what keeps us repeating behavior. And we want to change up those cues so that the old pattern isn't activated.
Well, that's an interesting example about seatbelts, because there were a lot of people who didn't use seatbelts when it was purely a matter of choice. But we've actually taken that discretion away from people, at least for cars made in, I don't know, the last however many years, because legislation requires that there's that annoying beeping noise if you don't have your seatbelt on. And so you no longer have the option of having a bad habit. Does that point the way to creating systems that take our choice, the element of will or willpower, away from us when it comes to habits that we should want to change or break?
Well, I wouldn't say so much it takes our willpower away from us as encourages us to do the right thing. And we've done this already in public health campaigns with anti-smoking, right? We have changed the environment, the smoking environment, to actually make it more difficult to smoke. And that's involved removing cues. So there are no longer cigarettes on shelves in stores. We don't get advertising for cigarettes. There aren't cigarette vending machines anymore. So they've taken away a lot of the cues to purchasing, but they've also made it more difficult to smoke. Smoking bans in public places, taxes on cigarettes make it harder to buy them. So that's sort of a two-pronged approach here. One is changing the cues that kept people smoking. And the second is making it more difficult to smoke, adding friction on the behavior so it's more difficult. And our habits are very responsive to that.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting you talk about smoking, because obviously that's a behavior that involves an element of addiction. Nicotine's an addictive chemical. And it's interesting, first of all, that changing the scenarios and the way you talk about still has an effect, even though it's addictive. But for some people, it doesn't, because they're addicted to the chemical of nicotine. And trying to do all the things you're talking about isn't going to get you across the line of quitting.
Well, let me point out that in the middle of the last century, 50% of Americans smoked, and now only 15% do. So yes, I'm not denying the effects of nicotine, but I'm saying that these forces on our behavior are very powerful, maybe more so than many of us want to admit.
I mean, if I could be the guinea pig here for a minute, let me tell you about a bad habit I would like to break that I've had a really hard time breaking, which is having my phone in bed. I definitely, as a result of having the phone, I don't have it there every night, but when I do, I don't sleep as well. If I wake up in the middle of the night, I'm inclined to reach for the phone, and then I'm less likely to go back to sleep. And just in general, when I don't have the phone there, I feel better about things. But I keep having my phone in bed for, you know, I have various reasons and excuses. But honestly, I think the bottom line is I want to check my phone. like it's something, you know, it's pleasurable or important or whatever it is. But even if I, you know, get in the groove of putting it in another room for a while, I somehow break the good habit and go back to the bad one. Can you help me?
Well, you're responding to rewards. The phone is designed to keep you using it in a very habitual way. If you use much social media comes in a big scroll. And every once in a while, you get this wonderfully interesting tidbit from a friend or something else that just keeps you scrolling. So what you have to do is you have to figure out how to reverse engineer those cues. You need to figure out how to change them or to put friction on them. Maybe you just need a little bit more practice, repetition in leaving the phone in a specific place before you go to bed so that it starts to become automatic. I would say you probably just haven't practiced it enough.
Well, that term friction you talked about is really interesting. You know, our company makes a podcast with Dr. Lori Santos at Yale called The Happiness Lab. And she's done a number of episodes that have touched on this question of, you know, how you can create friction around the things you don't want to do. But then I guess a kind of, you know, less friction or a system of rewards around the things you do want to do.
And the thing about friction is we don't give it a whole lot of credibility, simply because most of us think we're in charge, right? As you said earlier, we think we have free will. We think we are making decisions and doing things all the time. We're not aware of how much of the time we're simply responding to the environment around us. My favorite study right now on friction is one that was done in an office building. It was a 4-story office building. And it was done with researchers who wanted people to take the stairs and stop using the elevator so much. And it's a 4-story building, so that's possible. So what they started with is sort of how we start with our New Year's resolutions. They started off trying to convince people, right? Motivate them, get them to do the right thing. So they put up signs first, take the stairs, it uses many more calories than the elevator, good for your health. That had no effect. So they tried a different approach. They tried, take the stairs, saves energy, good for the environment, save our planet, no effect. So what they did is they slowed the closing of the elevator door by 16 seconds. And that was enough to reduce elevator trips by a third. So just the simple friction of having a slow door closing stopped people from taking the elevator. And the cool thing about the study is that 4 weeks later, when the researchers set the elevator door back to its normal speed, people kept taking the stairs. They still avoided the elevator because they had formed habits to take the stairs. See, and that's maybe 4 weeks every day would be enough practice for you, Jacob, in keeping your cell phone out of the bedroom.
Yeah, well, that's a good example of adding a tiny bit of invisible amount of friction helps. So, well, give me some friction examples around exercise, for example. I have pretty good habits around exercise because I've always been a runner and I get pleasure from doing it. So, you know, but I know a lot of people, just especially this time of year when it's cold in most of the country, it's just really hard to get motivated. How can you remove friction that will make it easier to get out and exercise?
Well, I think that the motivation would come from finding ways to make it rewarding. Mm-hmm. I used to be a runner too. It's not easy for me to do. So I started using elliptical. And if you've ever used an elliptical machine, it is the most boring thing in the world. So
agreed.
I hated it for a while until I figured out I can watch really stupid TV shows that I would never normally watch, read trashy novels that I would never normally spend the time reading just when I use the elliptical. And since I've started doing that, which is about 5 years ago now. I love it. I look forward to it. And I look forward to it because it's that combined experience. I've been able to figure out how to add a reward to it that makes it rewarding.
I mean, that reward in another context might be a bad habit, right? Watching trashy TV might be a habit you would want to break or change as part of your New Year's resolution. But why is it, it's okay in the context of using it to create a good habit, or because it's limited by the good habit? How do you think about that?
Habits are only good or bad in relation to your goals. So my goal is to get myself exercising, and I'm going to spend the time exercising anyway. So what does it matter what I'm thinking about when I exercise? That's how I think of it. My priority is exercise, how to get myself to do it.
It's interesting what we think of as discipline versus a habit. I mean, I have written a few books, and I always just thought of it as a butt in chair problem. You know, if I had my butt in the chair from 9 to 1 every day, the book got written. And if I didn't, it didn't. So I guess I built the habit, but I would say, I disciplined myself to sit there 6 days a week from 9 to 1. And when you thought about it, 9 to 1, it's only 4 hours a day. So it wasn't like you could have a life outside of doing that. The problem was, if you didn't have the discipline of doing that, you'd have to be kind of doing it all the time.
Exactly. But, you've touched on an interesting point, I think, which is, so what's the difference between a habit and discipline or willpower? How can we understand that? We always think of discipline as sort of self-denial. It's the kind of white-knuckling it through. We're going to make ourselves do it. So that's a high-effort process. And up until very recently, psychologists thought some people have high self-control like that. They're just able to do that better than others. And what we've learned instead from observing people is people who self-report, who say they have high self-control, they actually know how to form habits. So they start, as you did, if they want to write a book, they figure out what time of day they're best at writing or how many pages. Some people who are prolific writers write a certain number of pages every day. Some people write for a certain number of hours every day. I mean, the habit itself that they're forming has to do with those markers. Of course, writing itself isn't a habit. The habit is getting there and making yourself do it effortlessly. And that is the automaticity of habit. Of course, then you have to do the cognitive work of writing on top of that, but that's a whole different thing.
Yeah. Does it change with age? I mean, given that this is, you're looking at what's happening inside our brains, and our brains change as we get older, does it get easier or harder to change your habits as you get older?
Everything gets harder as you get older, Jacob.
That was sort of an obvious question, wasn't it? But I did. But on the other hand, there is sort of the habit of having habits, and the confidence that if you've changed habits in the past, you can do it. And I often do observe that it may be more settled when you're older, but it may be more settled in a positive direction.
Well, I think there's pretty good data that all of our brains, all parts of our brains, all parts of our neural systems do age. And they get a little less efficient, a little less effective as we get older. Research shows that older people have a harder time forming new habits. That might seem like it is inconsistent with our observations of a lot of older people who seem to do things out of habit a lot. And the thing is that as you get older, you have a harder time learning new habits, but you're still relying on all of the old ones that you learned earlier in life. And that may be where your sense of, older people are more stable, more sort of routine in their behavior. They may be relying more on older habits, and they just have less variability in their behavior in general.
So let's wrap up with some advice for listeners who presumably do have some habits they want to change. And it's a little after New Year's now, so we don't have to worry about the deadline. But what are three things to think about just to get started? Is one of them applying or removing friction?
Yes. One of them is identifying the behaviors. First, you have to know what behaviors are giving you problems. And have a very clear sense of what new behaviors you want to become part of your habits. And then figuring out how to repeat those on a regular basis, those new behaviors. Understanding the cues that drive behavior and understanding how to make the behaviors you want easier. So we talked about friction getting in the way of behaviors you don't want, but the friction in your life can also help you repeat behaviors that you do want. So, for example, there was a study done with cell phones, tracking cell phones, how far they traveled to a paid fitness center. What they found is that if you travel 5.1 miles to a gym on average, you only go once a month. But if you travel 3.5 miles on average, you go 5 times a month. So figuring out ways to streamline it so it becomes easier, make it more rewarding so that you'll do it more. Those are the keys to forming a new habit.
And when is it? It's when you're not thinking about doing it anymore, it's a habit, right? I mean, when does it become a habit?
Exactly, when the struggle ends and it's just cued by the environment around you and you're not even noticing that you're doing it, that's when it's a habit.
So you cite these examples of friction that's mostly invisible to people, but then there is friction that is visible, friction you create. How can you be conscious of friction and the way that it's affecting your habits, if so much of it is like the increment on the how long it takes the elevator door to close, something we're not aware of at a conscious level?
That is a challenge that many of us have because we believe in our own agency, right? We think that we are making decisions, and so that leads us to overlook many of the things that are actually influencing us in our environment. But I do think people can answer the question, what would make it easier for me to do something? And what would make it more difficult? Like, if you want to save money, taking your credit card out of automatic pay sites like Amazon or other sorts of online retailers, that makes sense. And most of us would be able to predict that that would make it a little harder for us to buy things. So once we start noticing these things, and once we're willing to say, okay, maybe I'm not completely in charge. Maybe there are a few things around me that also influence my behavior. And are they helping me? Once we start noticing them, I think that we can start to identify what they are for us personally. For you, Jacob, I would say, you already know your phone has this impact on you. You just keep hoping that you're going to follow through on your best intentions and not take it with you tonight to bed. But over time, you'll probably learn how to keep your phone regularly in another room, put the charger in another room, do something to make it easier for you to remember to leave it there before you go to bed. And that's going to help you form that habit.
Dr. Wendy Wood is Provost Professor of Psychology and Business at the University of Southern California. Solvable is produced by Jocelyn Frank. Booking by Lisa Dunn. Our managing producer is Catherine Girardeau. And Pushkin's executive producer is Mia Lobel. I'm Jacob Weisberg.